Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today on Gold Radio Cafe. It's Friday, August 31st, 2012, and welcome to the Gold and Silver Financial Review. My name is Bosco Kucharovich, and this program is brought to you by Central Metals. We understand the problem, and we have the answer. Gold and Silver Bullion Investments. Our website is centralmetalscorp.com, and our phone number is 519-915-7542. Our email address is mail@centralmetalscorp.com. That's mail@centralmetalscorp.com. And if you have any email questions for today's program, just send them to that email, and we'll try and get them answered for you. I just want to touch on a little bit of the action in the precious metals market right now. Silver is at $31.26. We've seen some volatility this morning due to the speech by Mr. Bernanke. Apparently, he basically stated that that they stand ready, as usual. They're ready to print if necessary. And gold we have right now at 1680.22. So again, the looks like for both of the metals we're in a breakout here. They continue to gold broke its recent high, actually, of 1675. So. Anyways, we're off to the races, I think, in the precious metals, and it looks good from here. We may see some small profit taking in the short term, but generally, I think that we're going to head to much higher levels here. Some of the news we have in Canada here. We have our co-host here, Jeff Dunphy. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Bosco. How are you doing this week?
Oh, I'm doing good. Keeping busy, a little mixed up here and there, but we're doing well. Jeff, I just wanted to talk to our listeners about we've had a lot of questions regarding the Canadian banks and so on. One of the articles that that you had sent me earlier this week regarding Canada's banks want to tame watchdogs bite. This was from August 24th in the Globe and Mail. I guess that the banks are not too keen on being further regulated or more investigations. And I guess the lobby group said that it isn't sure what kinds of systemic issues the government has in mind, but the financial institutions involved should determine if there's any need to report problems to federal officials. So it's kind of, you know, they want to watch themselves. The banks feel that they're competent enough to watch their own books, and they don't need federal regulators. And then we also have on, kind of ties into the same banking issue here, we have from August 28th, Bank of Canada buys back $500 million of bonds. And, of course, yesterday some of the biggest news in Canada was that the Canada banks, all the banks seem to have shown record profits. Most of them are showing record profits in trading revenue. Here's a piece from an article in the Financial Post. Profit at RBC Capital Markets investment banking business rose 88% to $486 million from $259 million. A year earlier, as trading revenue more than doubled. And then they talk about TD Securities. Their profits rose 61% in investment banking, fueled by higher trading revenue. Trading-related income more than tripled to $360 million. So the banks are making a lot of money on trading revenue. Jeff, with all this information about the bankings, are the banks in a position to what they're doing to fight inflation? Is it valid?
Well, I mean, we've got there's a global illusion going on, and that's the banks and the governments and the economists and the investment bankers. They all want to appease everybody in telling them that they're going to deal with inflation. Well, inflation is not the problem. In fact, inflation is a scam. The whole context of inflation is how you slow down growth. Well, the globe everywhere is not going through growth. It's going through stagnation, if not shrinking. So the whole ruse that we're going to fight inflation by threatening to raise interest rate is a lark. It's a joke. There's no growth going on in the world. This is how they think they're going to get themselves out of the pickle that they're in, is the fact that economies are slowly and surely collapsing.
Right, and I think that's I had a discussion with one client yesterday regarding, perception, and when prices of things are going down, or sorry, prices are going up, that just means that the value of your currency is going down. So I guess the same would apply to a government posting higher revenues in GDP growth. If your country's currency is losing value, that growth isn't really nothing to write home about, is it?
Absolutely. And I think it's very important for the listeners to understand a couple of things. The system, the financial system, is based on the illusion that it needs to grow forever, okay? So just grow. Whatever rate it needs to grow, it just needs to grow forever. And that's how the Federal Reserve Act that was enacted in 1913 put forward that they will grow themselves and constantly print money. That's why a dollar then is worth $100 now. That's why it takes $100 to buy what it did 100 years ago. So this is the devaluation of the currency. And their premise that they can grow themselves out of their pickle is erroneous. It's broken. And the faster and the sooner everybody figures that out, the more a correction lends itself to happen.
So if we can't rely on the currency, Jeff, to measure our wealth, what would the average person use if we know that the currency is being constantly created and value of that currency is always going down? How would people really measure their wealth? What would they do if they can't rely on the numbers and statistics?
Well, let's go macro first, and then let's also go into history. In the early 30s, Roosevelt confiscated America's gold. He took it all back, and took it all back at $20. And then he revalued the paper that was backed by gold in 1933 at $35. So effectively, he devalued gold not by half, but almost, or he devalued the paper not by half, but almost. So what the powers that be globally are looking at is that which currency potentially has the likelihood to default, or which currency has the likelihood to collapse. Now, that being said, let's wander through a couple of the things that are happening in the European arena, and also what's happening in China, and also, as you mentioned, the Jackson Hole meeting. Okay, so the European, let's address it and call it the European pickle. Okay, so The China, Angela Merkel has been visiting with the Chinese in Beijing, and here's what she's saying to them. It's okay, everything's okay, the economy's strong, Germany's strong, we'll pull out of this. And here's what the Chinese are saying to Angela Merkel. don't you dare print more paper, because that means all the money that you owe us is being devalued. You're going to be giving it back to us in more and more dollars. We don't want monopoly money. Okay? They hold huge euro paper, and their paper is devaluing. Okay? So that's what Angela's in Beijing talking about right now. The French president, François Hollande, he's in Madrid mentioning how the European Central Bank is going to come in and fix everything. Fixing everything means they're just going to print more money to buy back bonds, which is what is happening in Canada. Okay, and what they've managed to do effectively is they've managed to, it's called moral suasion, working in the markets and telling the markets what to think. In these markets, what they've done is they've driven bond rates in Italy and Spain down. The rates in Italy and Spain, the bond yields, were yielding north of 6%, and everybody was getting very upset at that. They can borrow at 0.5% or 1%. These bonds are yielding 6%. There's a big spread there. And what's transpired in their market machinations, some would say manipulations, they've come to the rescue of Italy and Spanish bonds, and they've driven their rates down to about 500 bips, so down a point, and maybe even 100 bips, 150 bips, so 450, 500 bips. Now, that makes everybody go, phew, for the moment, but the next shoe has yet to drop. This is, as we've seen for some time now, since 08, we've seen this delay. They're delaying for a good period of time. They're also chatting now, and Greece is certainly in the tumult of free fall, and nobody's really talking about Greece, because what they'll do is they'll print their way out of it. We think, we hope, we don't know, right? So now in the throes of this, there's a meeting on the 6th in Germany by the ECB to go in and buy bonds, as we said, to print money. And then there's a meeting on the 12th by the Supreme Court in Germany to say or to rule on whether that's constitutionally viable for the Germans, given that some of them are still mindful of the hangover they had in the Weimar Republic when you couldn't buy a loaf of bread for a bucket full of cash, of paper cash. So we're in an enormous free fall right now, and part of the whole gig here is that they think that they can grow themselves out of this calamity, and that's just wrong. That's a broken assumption. Okay. And so, you know, we all are looking to the Chinese with this delusion that something's going to happen about that. So, I mean, maybe we should chaff a little about China and also about the BRIC nations, which speaks to our delusion that we're going to grow our way out of this, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The banks are hoping, trusting, that we can grow ourselves out of this pickle, and denying all along the law of cycles. At the end of summer, which we just literally reached the end of August, so the end of summer is now another, you know, few weeks away or 6 weeks away, we are going to be entering a place where the leaves fall off the trees. How delusional is it for us to think that we can grow an economy in perpetuity without there being an ebb to the flow? We would be pretty upset, Bosco, if the leaves didn't fall off the tree. We'd have thought we'd have entered into another dimension. Would it not be odd if all of a sudden the leaves didn't fall off and fall didn't come and the sun didn't change in the sky? That's just ridiculous. However, the economists, the financial guys, the politicians, most definitely, they don't want anybody to think that growth can't carry on forever. This is nuts. I mean, it literally is insanity. So now let's chat about China. I'm off to China tomorrow, I think. We'll see how that unfolds. We have, the Western world has this mindset that the Chinese will be modest saviors of the global economy, because the demand in China is going to be so big that we're going to be able to sell stuff into China. The interesting irony is we've gone to China, built a bunch of manufacturing plants in China to sell things to the rest of the world. But let's not go into that idiocy.
Right.
How much, I mean, we've already established that it's pretty hard to believe what we're being told by the American economy and the economists and the politicians. It's pretty hard to understand and believe what we're being told by the Europeans. And now let's go to the extreme how often do the Chinese really tell us anything of any import or any insight about the Chinese economy, but to placate the markets by saying, oh, no, everything's good. We've got a 10% growth rate. 10% growth rate, aside from being unattainable and unsustainable, I think is just a fabrication. I'm going to try to find out. I'm going to make some inquiries when I'm there in the next week or so. I'm going to make some inquiries as to what they think and how much they're being told, the actual Hong Kong Chinese, the worker bees in this community, in the Chinese community. But it brings us to the delusion, and it also brings us into a conversation about the BRIC companies, right, about Brazil and Russia and India and China. Well, the BRIC countries are supposed to be the saviors of the globe because their economies are growing so strongly that they will spend our saving grace by their economies growing so much and buying from our economies. Again, color me curious, color me stupefied, but this literally is lunacy. And so, you know, we have a whole bunch of things going on, but in my opinion, and certainly I suspect you share this as well, we have a delusional bunch of people running around flapping their arms, trusting that they aren't plummeting to the ground. What do you think, Bosco?
Yeah, no, I agree, Jeff. I mean, I don't see, you know, the thing that I continually discuss with my clients is, you know, and some people that haven't woken up, if you will, you know, how long can this go on? Obviously, the policies that they're following by printing money and expanding credit and so on, I mean, if anybody just looks at it from a common sense approach, you know, you can't just keep on bailing out companies and printing money. And obviously, it has to end at some point. You know, where that point is, nobody really knows. But I mean, you know, people talk about there's continual political discussion in the U.S., especially now with the election coming, that, you know, whether or not the bailout packages worked and was it the right policy and see the, you know, whether or not they have a recovery or not. I mean, people got to really look from a different perspective. What does the bailout mean? Like, did they put a positive spin on it? Like that, oh, our chairman is a genius. Look, he decided that we need to do a bailout. Well, I mean, the economy was in such a crisis. The system actually did collapse, okay? People don't know, but there was a huge drop in the system, and they had to have an emergency meeting and get a bailout pushed through Congress so that they could save the system. So fundamentally, you know that the system is broken, okay? So they had to create this money out of thin air to save the system, and then now everything's all good. Well, no, it's not all good, because where did that money come from? The bailout packages and the stimulus and TARP and all this kind of stuff. Well, that came from the Federal Reserve. They created the money and, you know, purchased U.S. bonds or treasuries or whatever, or sent it to companies to, you know, to cover them so they don't go bankrupt, like GM. And now everything's all good. Well, no, it's not all good, because where that money has to be accounted for. Where did that? It didn't come from GDP growth. It didn't come from more jobs in America. It didn't come from growth in new technologies or new trade deals or anything like that. This money came from thin air. And who is responsible to balance the account for that money? It's the American people and us and Europeans and everybody. We are responsible now, because the government is going to look to the citizens to pay the debt through either higher taxes, through cuts in government spending, Social Security programs going down, pension funds being attacked. So they're going to have to start cutting. So how do you balance an account like that? There, eventually, whenever, from what I've read in history, whenever financial systems and countries get into this kind of a mess, usually the result is a war. And I think that's what we're looking at in right now with the situation in Iran and Israel and Syria. You know, it's just, I just don't understand what they're thinking. I mean, you can't just keep printing money and, you know, there's no foundation behind it.
No question, Bosco. And I think the compounding the whole military, the potential military eruption, is the fact that we have these countries that supposedly have economic growth or capacity to change the world. We got Russia and China involved in this growth equation, and you've got the Russians and the Chinese backing Syria because Syria is the biggest military buyer from those two countries, which creates a bit of a conflict between the U.S. Right? But I want to step back for a moment because, I mean, everything you've said is valid, but I want to step back for a moment to elucidate a couple of things. And the first is, what if our assumptions and our observations and our projections are incorrect? Now, let's put it in a little, it's a funny scenario, but let's just do this anyway. So Bosco and I are out and about, and we go into this lovely bar. It's a lovely lounge, and we go in, and we see there are a whole bunch of beautiful women. Now, this is before we were married, so we're young men looking and thinking that we might find a dinner companion or somebody to share a glass of wine over, and we're looking at all these beautiful women, and we're thinking, wow, this is brilliant. Look at all these women. They're all lovely. There aren't any men around. No potential threats because we don't have to worry about that. And Bosco being a handsome lad and me being one of Bosco's friends, we're both thinking very highly of our chances of scoring a glass of wine companion. Really? And we saddle up the first woman, and this woman says, dude, I like girls. And then we saddle up to the next woman, and the next woman, no, I like women. And we're saying, well, we do too. Well, no, you don't understand. All of us in here like women. So we were operating on the assumption that all these beautiful women were a certain way.
Right.
And when we came to the reality of it, we look at each other and go, we're in the wrong place.
Right.
We've made, you know, the world is playing, and we talk about the normalcy bias, we're playing on an enormous assumption and something that we've been fed for decades, almost 100 years, and that is we can grow forever. The other thing that we're trusting, if you will, we're trusting sorts, particularly the Chinese, who don't tell you anything about their economy that they don't want you to hear or know, okay? How is their economy? I don't know. Do you? What happens if their economy is weak? I don't know. Then what? Well, all of a sudden, the growth issue disappears. They're very secretive about the whole thing. I mean, my intelligence tells me that the Chinese economy is not booming as they are representing. And this is coming directly from China. There is a one-way investment mindset in China. The Chinese are over here trying to buy Nexen and trying to buy a whole bunch of large companies to which shareholders are going, great, I make a quick buck. I make 30 or 40 or 50% on the current stock price. But there is a huge conundrum going on right now, I suspect, in Ottawa about this takeover. The Americans won't let big Chinese companies take over big American companies. They feel threatened by that. What if the Chinese mindset is, we have to get out of these U.S. dollars as fast as we can because they are going to be worth nothing in a relatively short period of time? Oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. Some in the world are talking about backstopping a currency by a commodity, gold or silver. What would happen if that happened? Well, the last really high profile guy who suggested this used to head the IMF. His name was Dominique Strauss-Kahn. And you know what? He got dragged out of an airplane and thrown into prison because God help us if we should have a currency that's actually backstopped by something real rather than the promise of the governments, which are all bankrupt as far as we know. Mm-hmm. So what if we're playing with a whole bunch of incorrect assumptions, Bosco? What if we really are flapping our arms as we're plummeting to the ground, deluding ourselves into thinking that the harder we flop, the less briskly we will fall. Right? I think it's time for people to wake up. I think it's time for people to recognize that the very law of cycles, you can't swing that way, that in that direction forever. Soon enough, you have to swing back in the other direction. The law of cycles dictates that there is a growth stage and then there is a retraction stage. I don't know, color me curious. I believe in the laws of nature, of Mother Nature, far more rigorously than I do believe in the laws of fiscal policy that were set up based on erroneous assumptions. Color me curious, Bosco, but I don't know. Welcome and interested in hearing anybody who has contradictory evidence to this or has a differing opinion to this, because I've yet to be convinced that printing money has ever been a solution. In fact, I'm pretty much convinced that printing money is the beginning of the end for a fiscal system.
Yeah, no, I agree, Jeff. I think the powers that be, I think that they know that printing money is not the solution, but they're doing it because this is like a race to the bottom. It's, you know, you have all these people like John Corzine and all these financial institutions that are getting away with stealing clients' money, okay, and not having to serve any jail time or some small fine. And it's kind of like not a free-for-all, but just a grab for whoever can scam the most from the citizens. It's really, you know, they're in control of the system, so they're going to do whatever they can to make themselves as rich as possible, okay? And who's left holding the bag? It's the middle class and the lower class and all the, you know, the entire manufacturing industry of a country. Like, it's kind of like the U.S. is following a strategy to become a banana republic. I think that they know from history that this doesn't work, but what they're trying to do is to fool everybody as long as possible, and then, you know, when it comes time to really have a sound currency backed by gold or silver, or I haven't found anything else that really worked in history, but you know, when they do back it with gold and silver, okay, who has the most physical, and then that country or that corporation or individual or whatever it may be will be in control. There's that old saying that he who holds the gold makes the rules. So
yeah, no question.
One individual actually that you know, we've heard the story that England sold all of its gold at the low. It was around $250 or so. They call it Brown's Bottom. And the individual that used to join us on this program, the late Bob Chapman, he had told us that the people that bought England's gold were the Rothschild family. So I believe that they know, you know, that gold is where you should be. They bought England's gold, and you know, well, what did the British pound do since then? It's losing value continuously, and it's just a, and then the idea that what you mentioned too, that the, you know, that we always have to show positive GDP growth. Well, I mean, any business, if you look at a country like a business, which essentially it really is, you know, you're not going to have continual growth. There's always going to be times of contraction and so on. Things change, and you know, it's how they keep the growth going is by printing money, and
One of the things that, I mean, Bob's observation that the Rothschilds were buying England's gold, one of the things that we bring up on more than one occasion is The guys that are very powerful and very wealthy in this particular arena of ours globally are not dumb. I mean, they're very smart. And the fact is, they rely on the working class and they rely on the taxpayers to be dumb. And in fact, they manipulate, or they, let us say, that they fabricate media and they fabricate evidence to keep us all in the dark. And part of our obligation to ourselves, but not only that, our obligation to the well-being of the economy, the well-being of our country and community and the whole thing, is not being complicit by doing nothing, but by taking some kind of action, making mention of it, turning the lights on. These guys know that there will be a point in time where the fiscal collapse will just come. It's inevitable. It's not a function of if, as you said a little earlier, it's a function of when. And when that happens, what would you and I do, Bosco, if we knew that the fiscal scenario was all going to come, was going to come to a collapse? Well, we would do what the Rothschilds are doing. We'd buy up as much gold and silver as we could, and then we'd reevaluate. We'd get rid of as much paper as we could, and then when a currency came out that was backstopped by silver and gold, we would reap a massive gain in terms of paper currency.
Right.
You know, as Eric Sprott wants to say on his site, on the news all the time, he is literally of the view that if gold was allowed to trade unfettered by manipulation, and this is really important for you to know, ladies and gentlemen, we are of the belief that the gold and silver markets are being compromised by the powers that be in terms of their price. And Eric Sprott's declaration, quite simply, to which we both agree, is if gold and silver were allowed to trade unfettered, they would be much higher than they are today. And we've seen the price of gold, or the price of silver, go up from 25 or 6 bucks. It's north of 30 right now. Is it not 31 or something? And we've seen the price of gold up in the last 3 or 4 weeks by $100. Now, I suspect, as Bob had said, and also as another newsletter has said, if the shorts, the manipulation, if the shorts had to cover, the price of gold would go up by hundreds of dollars, maybe even $1,000 in a very short period of time. The powers that be don't want anybody to know this or see this, because then they will truly be out of control, out of their capacity to manipulate perspective and perception. And what they're doing right now is they're couching their bet, because they know that there will be a point in time where they cannot manipulate the market in that fashion. So, Bosco, it's your guess, it is mine, when this happens. It's I trust that our listeners can become better prepared for it and more perceptive to the machinations and the manipulations of what they're choosing to tell us. We've got Bernanke saying, oh, yeah, no, we're going to support the economy. Well, saying we're going to support the economy and printing money is sort of saying, I'm going to help the patient with this gun. Right? I'll shoot the patient, but I'll take care of them. The Europeans are doing the same. The Chinese are doing the same thing. They're saying, what are you doing? You're devaluing what we own. And so there is an enormous amount of pressure and tension in this. And it lines itself to a train running out of track at a very fast speed.
I like that, though. That's one way for doctors, I guess, in that sense, for doctors, for job security, make sure that people are sick or go around shooting people. Oh, don't worry, I'll shoot you, but I'll take care of you. I like that. But, you know, people, you know, we talk about manipulation and that on this program, and, you know, people look at, oh, these guys, you know, it's some kind of conspiracy, nobody manipulates Mark. And we discussed it before. You had mentioned what happened back in the Napoleon War and so on with the Rothschilds and that. But people need to understand that there is, like, President Reagan in 1988 created what they call the Working Group in Financial Markets, and I don't know if he created as well the Plunge Protection Team. These organization or whatever they are, an association or group of banks or individuals or trading houses or whatever, they do exist, and they were created for a reason. President Reagan passed an executive order that allows the certain group of financial institutions or whatever they may be to go in and manipulate the market. I think the intention of that originally was to kind of to help in case a frantic situation existed and to kind of stabilize the market. But what I think is happening is they're going beyond helping the market. They're going in intentionally manipulating it for their own benefit. I mean, you know, I don't see that there's anything wrong with, you know, if certain government controls come in and, you know, if something's wrong with the market to come in and help it. But again, you're still bordering on, you know, that isn't capitalism. Capitalism, if you go into business and you fail, you pay the consequences, not that the government's going to bail you out and you can continue on in business. You know, what does that say for competitors? You know, what's the use of having competition then?
I mean, it's just a bit of a farce in that regard. And I think Reagan did this, but the government has been doing it for quite a while. And on a previous show, Bosco, we chatted about the MOPE perspective, and it's management of perception. And one of these things that we chatted about, ladies and gentlemen, was how the government chooses to disclose economic information in a fashion that doesn't get anybody upset. So what they did historically, back in the 20s, in the 29 and in the 30s, when the Depression was there, they had an unemployment number that they presented. And they said, there are 100 units of unemployment here, ladies and gentlemen. And the checklist was, let's say, the checklist was 15 items long. And they counted up the 15 items, and they came to 100 units of unemployment. And that's what they reported. Well, as time goes on, and as their management of perception goes on, they look at each other, and Bob and Stan are in the back room looking at each other, and they're saying, well, if we add up these 15 points, our unemployment is, say, 300 units. Yeah, and the boss comes along and goes, oh, God, we can't tell people about that. It'll just get them upset. Well, maybe what we can do, and this is actually what they do, Bosco, reduce the list from 15 items to 12. Okay, what's that number? Oh, 250. No, that's not. Let's reduce it from 15 to 10. What's that number? Oh, that's still not good. Hell, let's reduce it from 15 to 7. And then everybody stands around and goes, well, that won't upset people. We can tell them this is what it is. And they pretend to disclose the unemployment numbers are only 100, so it's not as bad. When, in fact, if they use the old methodology of counting, the unemployment numbers in any country, I mean, more obviously we're chatting about the states, are massively higher than they were historically. So this is the management of perceptions. Because God knows we don't want anybody to know the truth, because if they knew the truth, it would be very upsetting. We'd have runs on the banks, and we'd have people running around, you know, telling everybody that the sky is falling. Well, again, we talk about the manipulation. Now, another point I wanted to bring up before we get to the end of our time here, Bosco, has anybody noticed that we have a whole bunch of floods going on? A little while ago, we had two-thirds of Manila underwater. I've just seen recently that there's been a typhoon warning in some faraway land. I've been reading some articles on a whole bunch of floods. Now, we see the hurricane sweeping through the southern states, but there's a whole lot of floods now. What strikes me from a macro perspective is that we're seeing a bit of Mother Nature here that, let's say, and I don't know, maybe we should all go do the research. My sense is we're seeing more flood-related activity than we've seen historically. And some of the sites I've read, this is a dramatic observation by some. But what happens is that if we have, in the past 10 years, let's say the average number of floods have been 3 every year, and this year they're at 10, the media won't set up and say, we're going to report on these 10. They're going to say, yeah, we've been there, we've done that, we've talked about floods. It's boring. If it bleeds, it leads. But, you know, we can talk about 3 floods being nasty and a bunch of people dying in these 3 floods. But now let's talk about the macro implication of these floods. We have global warming, which I think everybody recognizes is here. I think the delusion that you and I, Bosco, because we drive vehicles that don't get 80 miles to the gallon is the cause of it, is a bit delusory. But let's go into the place that says this. If there are many more times floods and the water scenario that's happening around the world. These are compromising the economies that they are flooding. So all of a sudden, Manila, which is a thriving city, is in the throes of rebuilding and grinding to an economic halt. Okay, and what if we have a whole bunch of economies that are brought to an economic halt as a result of Mother Nature playing these hands? We saw the price of oil go up a bit because everybody was worried because the Gulf Coast was going to be hit. These are very real issues. So I'm suggesting that not only do we have a fiscal and a political calamity, but Mother Nature is playing some pretty weird and wild tricks. London and England, just prior to the Olympics, had the wettest June it's ever seen in all of its history by some ridiculous margin. They were all going, I don't know whether we're going to be able to have the Olympics because there is so much water. This is going on globally. There's a whole bunch of flooding going on. And in the macro sense, when a city, state, whatever, is digging out, if you will, pardon the pun, but is bailing out from a flood, its economy grinds to a halt because their whole focus is paying and asking for help for a flood. So there's some macroeconomic issues that come from Mother Nature's calamity as well. So this is not something that we should view lightly, in my opinion, because I think it does affect the globe.
Oh, yeah, and that's something that, normally people don't think about that kind of, until you brought it up, I never thought about, never mind the financial problems that we're having, that are intentional and manipulated and controlled by the financial industry and so on, to bail out companies that fail. What if we have a natural disaster that destroys something, that could be even worse? So nobody ever thinks of, we discuss counterparty risk as far as financial institutions and so on with your investments. Never mind a natural disaster risk. What are you going to do then if you go to your bank and it's flooded and there's nobody there? So that's a good point. People need to, it's another factor in weighing the risks of your life and your standard of living and your investments and so on in your future. So I'm glad you brought that, Jeff.
Flooding, and then a relatively short period of time, literally in the last little bit, we had a 7.9 magnitude earthquake off of the Philippines. And so everybody is fretting about a tsunami warning, which has recently just been canceled, but earthquakes are happening, Mother Nature's changing, there's some rains happening. You know, what's interesting is a lot of the flooding isn't coming from tsunamis, but it's coming from weather. It's coming from typhoons, hurricanes. And these have real economic calamity. I mean, the tsunami that happened in Japan a very short period of time ago, a couple of years ago, was not consequential. The flooding that happened in Bangkok put a whole bunch of production facilities for a lot of the Japanese and a lot of the Chinese facilities out of business, right? So let us pay attention to these very real things as well. So I don't know, color me curious, Bosco, and we do sound a bit calamity-minded, ladies and gentlemen, but it's not so much calamity-minded as undertaking to see things as they are, not as we have been deluded into thinking that they should be or as others want us to see them. Being able to see things in the plain light of day, right?
Yeah, well, we do on this, MJF, try and get people to think outside the box, and sometimes it takes, presenting facts and truth that isn't really pretty. We're not here to win a political position or win a position on some board or anything. We're just here to try and present the facts to people and try and wake them up and see the truth and realize that gold and silver is an important part of your financial assets. And, people can do with that with whatever they like. I mean, we're at the end of our program now. Jeff, I'd like to, thank you for joining us today. on your trip to China if you end up going. And folks, we'll be back next week with Jeff, and I'm sure we'll have a lot more news than interesting commentary. With that, have a good weekend, Labor Day weekend. Jeff, anything you'd like to say in closing?
No, again, Bosco, just thank you, everybody, for listening, and thank you for us allowing us to be of service in providing this information to you.
Okay, have a good weekend. Goodbye.
Talk to you soon.